The temple is meant to foster the family bond of Israel as Israelites worship and rejoice together before God. And that is why the temple acquires a lasting hold on the Israelite imagination at the moment that it comes into being and long after it is destroyed. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, Episode 9, Majesty and Humility in Jerusalem. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. It may be a strange story to cite as we discuss one of the most important moments in the history of Jerusalem. And this story concerns a man who, I must say, was not one of my favorite presidents. But nevertheless, we begin today by speaking of Andrew Jackson's big block of cheese. It was in 1835 that President Jackson received a 1,400-pound block of cheese as a gift from a Colonel Meacham of New York. And as the Ripley's.com website puts it, quote, by 1837, Jackson's second term was winding down, and he wasn't about to haul a 2-year-old mountain of cheese with him out of the White House. So he decided to make the famed fromage a featured player at his last public reception in the presidential palace, end quote. Thus did all of Washington descend to eat an entire block of cheese. To this day, the moment is celebrated as a quintessentially democratic and American moment. And the truth is that whatever one makes of it, one could not imagine this taking place in the same period in any of the royal domiciles of Europe. Could one not conceive of the horror of a hypothetical visiting duke or viscount gazing upon this event? But what, ladies and gentlemen, about ancient royal Jerusalem? Could the king draw all the people together in a special celebration? He could indeed. And this celebration was ever so much more sacred, one which thereby showed the generations to come what Jerusalem was all about. With his palace built, David then orders the Ark of the Covenant brought to the new capital city. Recall that for several centuries, the Ark was to be found in the tabernacle at Shiloh. And then after Shiloh's destruction, the Ark had had no home. Originally, the Ark being brought to Jerusalem is mishandled, drawn on a wagon instead of borne by the Levites, provoking the wrath of God. This episode we have discussed in Bible 365. For now, we focus on what follows. When the Levites bring the Ark into the city, David celebrates with all of Israel. In contrast to ancient kings who usually seek to be worshipped like the gods they purportedly represent, David stands with all Israel whirling in front of the ark, rejoicing in the presence of God. 2 Samuel chapter 6, verse 14. And David danced before the Lord with all his might, and David was girded with a linen apron. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouting with the sound of the shofar. And as the ark of the Lord came into the city of David, Michal, Saul's daughter, looked through a window and saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, and she despised him in her heart. Why does Michal, David's wife, despise her husband here? The answer seems to lie in the fact that she was born a princess, the daughter of Saul. She was raised in a royal house, and she feels that David rejoicing before all the people in a manner that she associates with riffraff is disrespectful to his royal status. But David clearly believes that true royalty is showing that he too is akin to a commoner before the royalty of God. Indeed, one might suggest that it was precisely this perspective that was the source of David's true royalty. As the ark ascends into Jerusalem, David goes out of his way to include everyone in his celebration. Verse 17, and they brought in the ark of the Lord and set it in its place in the midst of the tent that David had pitched for it. And David offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. And as soon as David had made an end of offerings, burnt offerings and peace offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord of hosts. And he dealt among all the people, among the whole multitude of Israel, to the women and to the men, to every one, a loaf of bread and a good piece of meat and a flagon of wine. So all the people departed, every one to his house. Thus does David ensure that the celebration before the Lord and the designation of Jerusalem as the dwelling place of the Ark of the Lord is one in which all participate, one in which all take part, and he further shows that he, in turn, will only consider his own celebration complete if he takes part in the celebration of the people. What is taking place here is an embodiment of David's vision of what Jerusalem will be, a site where all Israel will be joined together. We must note what joins them, not merely feasting, but celebrating David's reverence for God, a reverence that they, in turn, learn to reflect as well. The eating of the block of cheese in Jackson's White House may have been quintessentially democratic, but it was, at its core, an act of eating. And it is not clear that true communion of citizens was achieved. Or, as one eyewitness recounted, what occurred was, quote, "For hours did a crowd of men, women, and boys hack at the cheese, many taking large hunks of it away with them. When they commenced, the cheese weighed 1,400 pounds, and only a small piece was saved for the president's use. The air was redolent with cheese, the carpet was slippery with cheese, and nothing else was talked about at Washington that day," end quote. In contrast, the Bible emphasizes in Deuteronomy that celebrations in the temple are meant to take place in a very specific manner. Ata uvincha uvitecha, v'avdecha v'amatecha, with your family, your sons and your daughters, your servants, and, the Bible adds, v'hager v'hayatom v'almana asher bisharecha, the stranger, the widows, and the orphans that are in your gates. Jewish joy is only achieved when our celebration is sanctified and when we are all joined together, communing with our Creator and with each other. But Michal, a princess of the house of Saul, is still shocked by the fact that this man who has become king is conducting himself in what she believes to be a very unroyal manner. She makes her displeasure known to her husband, arguing that she thought David's dance unbefitting of his royal status. David in turn responds sharply. Verse 21, "And David said unto Michal, it was before the Lord which chose me instead of thy father, and over all his house, to appoint me ruler over the people of the Lord, over Israel. Therefore will I rejoice before the Lord." This response may seem very sharp, but there is a profound point being made here. One of the striking aspects of Saul's kingship was his seemingly constant concern for honor being shown him in the presence of the people. It was immediately following Saul's failures in the war against Amalek that he is informed by Samuel that God had torn the monarchy away from him. At this point, everything is collapsing. Saul's legacy is at stake. And instead of pleading for the revocation of the divine decree, Saul instead asked the prophet to honor him, Saul, before the people. Even at this excruciating moment, Saul seemed to care specifically about his honor. As Rabbi Amnon Bazak puts it, quote, "When compared with Saul's behavior, David's humility and self-effacement before God is particularly striking," end quote. Thus does this moment of the bringing of the Ark into Jerusalem mark what Jerusalem is meant to be. Yes, a city of David's majesty, but also of his humility. It will be the city of David, but thereby the city in which David reminds all of us to bond with each other in worshiping and celebrating with the Lord our God. It is only in understanding David's humility that we can appreciate what comes next. Chapter 7. "And it came to pass when the king sat in his house, and the Lord had given him rest round about from all his enemies, that the king said unto Nathan the prophet, See now, I dwell in a house of cedar, but the ark of God dwelleth within curtains." David, in other words, wishes to build a temple. This is the dream that will define Jerusalem, and it too is born not in majesty but humility. David cannot bear that he has a home in Jerusalem and God does not. Indeed, as we have mentioned, David's purpose is to crown the highest point of the city with the temple, extending Jerusalem beyond its original walls up to the summit of Mount Moriah, in order to emphasize that all glory in Jerusalem is to be given to God. And the home of God of which David dreams is one in which all Israel will experience communion like unto the day that the ark entered Jerusalem. Initially, the prophet Nathan responds positively to David's request. And Nathan said to the king, Go, do all that is in thine heart, for the Lord is with thee. But then Nathan is sent again to David, informing David that God has denied his dreams, for reasons that David will reveal at the end of his life, reasons that we will discuss in a later lecture. But even as his dream is denied, David is simultaneously informed that his son, Solomon, will build the edifice that he envisions. God says, And when thy days be fulfilled and thou shalt sleep with thy fathers, I will set up thy seed after thee, which shall proceed out of thy innards, and I will establish his kingdom. He shall build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. Again, David's response is not glorying in his eternal dynasty. He celebrates not himself, but his God and the people of whom he is a part. David says, Who am I, O Lord God, and what is my house that thou hast brought me hitherto? And he adds, And what one nation in the earth is like thy people, even like Israel, whom God went to redeem for a people to himself, and to make him a name, and to do for you great things and awesome for thy land before thy people, which thou redeemest to thee from Egypt, from the nations and their gods. For thou hast confirmed to thyself thy people Israel to be a people unto thee forever, and thou, Lord, art become their God. The temple will not be built by David, but it will still be David's temple, a temple open to all Israel, joining all Israel. Yes, there will be sacred sections that only priests will enter, but amazingly, there will be no site in the temple that is open to kings and not commoners. There will be no area where nobility is more welcome than anyone else. The temple is meant to foster the family bond of Israel as Israelites worship and rejoice together before God. And that is why the temple acquires a lasting hold on the Israelite imagination at the moment that it comes into being and long after it is destroyed. As American as the cheese meal was, it is difficult in today's day and age to imagine the White House flinging its doors open to everyone. Now everything is by invitation, which of course makes a visit to the White House seem all the more exciting and exclusive. A friend of mine, Tevi Troy, who worked in the Bush administration, once reflected upon the White House Hanukkah parties by writing that, quote, "Jewish visitors to the White House often live up to the old maxim that Gentiles leave without saying goodbye, while Jews say goodbye and never leave. After one particularly late night at the White House, Chief of Staff John Bolton joked that the White House military aides who staff official events in full ceremonial garb had to unsheath their swords in order to get Hanukkah celebrants to exit the residence," end quote. But with David's Jerusalem is born, a royal dream in all humility of a house of God open to and binding all of Israel. And that is why this would be a temple and a city to which Jews would never say goodbye and which would never leave their hearts. This is Meir Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.